Hello and welcome to the Slow Home Podcast. This is the summer series, which makes sense if you're from the Southern Hemisphere. Not or, so much everyone else.
Or the winter.
Sure.
Winter.
Warmers.
Winter warmers.
The winter warmers. There we go.
The Slow Home Pod winter warmers.
Now we've added knowledge nugs. So today is our third in the summer series / winter warmers series.
Okay, all right.
All right, okay, all right, okay. And today we revisit an episode where I chatted with the delightful Mr. Paul Jarvis.
Himself.
Himself.
Creative.
Just a super all-round creative guy. He just makes stuff constantly and I'm always in awe of his output. Yeah. If you haven't signed up to Paul's newsletter, do yourself a favor and go and do that after you finish listening to this episode, because he puts out every Sunday, just the content varies a lot, but it's almost always around creativity and finding, simplicity is kind of too broad a term. And also too specific a term. Anyway, just go and do yourself a favor. He's a fantastic writer. And talking to him was brilliant. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's sort of random how we've chosen these episodes for the summer series. Some of them are our most
downloaded.
Other ones are milestones. Yeah. But this one, I just think was super interesting. I feel like people need to listen to it again if they... Do you know what I mean? Like, it's one of those things that you can just go back and listen to, this one.
Paul talks a lot about... making a massive shift in the way he was living his life. He and his wife packed up and moved to like this tiny island in Canada and just completely shifted the way they were doing things. And it was really interesting to me to listen to him talk through that thought process and what it looked like. And I don't know, plus he's just such a chilled out guy. Like nothing seems to bother him.
Yeah, exactly. At all. Yeah.
And I don't know, I like that because that's not how I used to be, but it's a great conversation. Before we head into it, though, this is the last days of Simple
it's like
Year registration.
Days, yeah, 3 days left.
It's closing on the 15th of January, 2017. So, if you're interested, if you've been putting it off, go and head over to slowyourhome.com. Click on the tab that says Simple Year 2017, and you can just find out more about it. Who's hosting each month's module? What we're going to be taking you through. I'm doing the current module, which is decluttering. But if you sign up before the 15th of January, you've still got plenty of time to get all of those materials. And I'm hosting the first webinar of the year at the end of January. So you can be part of that. But head over there, check it out, see if it's something you're interested in. And yeah, I'd love to see you guys there.
Awesome. What date are you doing the webinar?
The 28th of January.
Okay.
Yeah. So like 2 days after we get home.
I was going to say, you're right now we're winter warming.
We are winter warming right now. We're in Japan.
Mm. Okay, well, enjoy the show.
Enjoy. Hey Paul, how are you going?
Hey, I am awesome, Brooke. How are you?
Really, really well. I'm really stoked to be talking to you. I know we kind of set this up a month or two ago, but it's I've been, as I said to you before, I've been listening to your podcast for years and reading your Sunday dispatches, and it's really nice to actually have a two-way conversation with you.
Well, thanks. Yeah, this is awesome.
Fabulous. So let's just dive right in. You write a lot specifically about creativity, working online, freelancing and minimalism as well, and you know, simplicity and simplifying. Can you tell me, have you always been someone who's been attuned to minimalism, or was there a time in your life where you weren't and where things maybe looked different to what they do today?
I think I've always been. Well, I was talking to my mom the other day, and she lives across the country in outside of Toronto, and I live on Vancouver Island, so. Her and my dad were making their will. And so she called me up and she's like, was there anything that you want specifically for us to put in the will? I'm like, no, I don't want your stuff. I don't want any of my stuff. And she's like, you've always been like that. I'm like, yeah, I guess I kind of have. So I don't think there was ever a time when I was like, maybe I'm a minimalist. It was just, I just don't care about things.
Yeah.
And I guess I've never really cared about things. I think where it all kind of came to a head was when my wife and I moved from Vancouver proper, like downtown Vancouver, the city, to Vancouver Island, which is totally different, even though they have kind of the same name and it's confusing for everybody except the people that live here. And we moved to a town of about 1,000 people in like 4 hours from where we are now, just in the middle of nowhere. And we were trying to sell our condo in Vancouver. And our real estate agent was like, if you leave all your stuff here, it'll probably sell faster because it looks staged. And we had nice stuff. We didn't have a ton of stuff. We had nice stuff. And so we were like, okay. So we moved to the island, to the place that we were renting. And we moved with basically our camping gear. So like a blow up bed and like a plate and a fork each. And we lived that way for like 6 months. We were like, I don't really miss anything. Like, one, I don't really miss television. And two, like, I had my computer to work. We had our surfboards. We had like 5 or 6 things from our camping gear. And we were totally fine for 6 months. And then when we did move all of our stuff over here, we got rid of most of it. We're like, I didn't miss any of this stuff. So why do we want to, because it's expensive to get stuff onto a truck, onto a boat, back onto the road on the island and up island. So we wanted the smallest truck possible because that costs the least for the ferry ride. So we're just like, why don't we just not bring all of our stuff or much of our stuff or any stuff? And how about that?
That's I love the process of experimenting and trying things, you know. So you guys are like, well, let's just take the absolute bare minimum and see how we go. And so often we realize, you know, these things that were essentials aren't really essentials. There's genuine essentials, and then there's the extraneous stuff that we tell ourselves are essentials. And I always find when we go camping, I'm exactly the same. You know, I come home and the house feels really big and really full, and it's neither of those things, but you get by for a week or 2 weeks with very little, and it's wonderful. You know, it's not a difficult thing. It's actually really liberating. Do you think that you would have, had you not kind of had to go through that process of living with such few items, do you think that you would have kind of made the shift and let go of that stuff anyway? Or do you think that was kind of like a catalyst for you?
Probably because we didn't really have that much stuff. And even a story before that was the reason we have so little camping stuff is because we bought an RV. We bought an Airstream because we were basically going to live out of an Airstream and drive around and live in an Airstream and be nomads in North America. And so we bought an Airstream. It was brand new off the lot. It was the biggest piece of shit. I don't know if I'm allowed to swear, but it was a piece of shit. It broke. It was never fixable. Airstream basically disavowed trying to fix it or deal with us. It was like the worst experience ever. And we bought it. We drove it across. We bought it in Ontario and drove it across to BC. And that for 5 days, it was great because it only broke right when we left. So we brought it back right away. And then for 5 days, it was okay. And then after those 5 days, everything just went to shit. And so we were planning, once we got it home, we were planning on going on the road for about 3.5 months the next year. So we brought it to a dealership here and we were like, you have a year to fix it. Just fix it. And then they didn't. So at the day before that 3.5 month trip started, we just walked in, threw him the keys and was like, it's your fucking problem now. Like, we're done. And then we went and we bought a tent, and it's like a 2-person tent. It's maybe like 1.5 meters by 1.5 meters. And we went on that same road trip with my Volkswagen Golf, which obviously isn't a very big car, and a tent. And was just what would fit in the car with us also in the car for like 3.5 months. So even there's like a million stories in my life where it's like, I understand, or I'm shown by life or the universe or whatever, that I just don't need the things that I think I might need because they don't matter. Like, we were going to have, even the Airstream is like a small Airstream too. But still, like, we had a bunch of stuff that was going in it. And when you go from an RV to a tent, there's less room because it's now all in a Golf instead of a Golf and an Airstream. So I just feel like there's been so many times in my life where it's just like, I just reminded of the fact that the stuff that I think I need, I just really don't.
You just don't. I think when you're aware of it though, as well, I think that's half the battle. And so often if that happened to someone else, they would have freaked out about, you know, about the fact that what's happening, everything's just gone to hell, and how am I going to do this trip? And they'd go and replace it with the same amount of stuff, you know. And I think the fact that you kind of already had that that feeling that you needed so much less is, I don't know, that probably would have helped. Going back to something you were talking about before with your parents and their wills, there is nothing more likely to solidify people's views on stuff, I think, than thinking about when they pass away. I find it really interesting, you know, when if I often suggest to people that who are struggling to kind of simplify and figure out why they want to simplify and what they stand to gain, maybe think about 60 years' time, you know, someone giving your eulogy or what you would like people to say when you pass away. And I can almost guarantee you that your shoes won't be mentioned, and all the crap that you surround yourself with, you know, even just mindlessly won't be mentioned. And it helps to really solidify what's important. Are your parents kind of facing that at the moment, or are they similar to you?
No, they have, like, I think about the basement of the house that they still live in, that I grew up in. And it's just, like, it's full.
Mm.
Like, they can, I think they're not as bad as the average, because where we used to live, we had, it was probably a 2,000 square foot house with a double garage. We were the only people on the street of eight people that could put both of our vehicles in the garage. Nobody else had room in their garage, which I'm pretty sure is for cars.
No, you're wrong. It's for boxes of stuff.
Exactly. So my parents could put both of their vehicles in the garage, but their basement, like, the basement's full of things. And even like, it's even like the place that we moved into previous to this place, their garage was full, because I know when we went to look at the place, it was full. And they also had a shed on the side of the house, because the house didn't have enough storage in it that they bought another shed. They left that shed full of stuff when we moved in, and they're just like, yeah, we just don't want to deal with it. I'm like, okay, fine. So we went through it, because we're nosy and whatever. We were renting the place, so it's our place. And it was just all like Christmas decorations and Halloween decorations and that kind of stuff. I don't know. That's like my biggest pet peeve with stuff, is like these things that you bring out for one day or for like a few weeks, and then they just collect space and dust, or you have to pay for them in a storage locker for the rest of the year. And it's like, I don't know. I don't feel sad that I don't have a Christmas tree. I mean, obviously I don't have kids either, so that's sometimes a big part of it. But like, I don't feel like a worse person because I don't have ghosts and spiders to put on my house at Halloween. So I don't know.
I think it's the thing that I find fascinating is that stuff actually stresses us out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it does. It actually does have an impact. It's not just out and fun, or it actually might be fun for those 3 weeks, 4 weeks that it's out. But the rest of the year, I find people talk to me all the time, and we don't do Halloween much in Australia at all. So we don't do Halloween at all, and we've only got like a really small box of Christmas decorations because we have kids, and they love it, which is fine. But anything beyond that would be so incredibly stressful. And that's what people tell me time and time again. They're like, I've got these five huge plastic tubs of things. I'm like, do you really need them? Are they bringing anything to you? And if they are, fine. But it's that kind of mindless accumulation and holding on, I think, that's troubling. Because I get a bit of pushback from people, you know, say, well, you know, we surround ourselves with stuff because it's you know, brings us joy. It reminds us of things. It's, you know, and that's fine, providing, I think, that it's intentional. It's only when people kind of hoard and collect mindlessly that it becomes problematic.
Yeah. And even like, my house isn't empty. Like, the house that we live in now, we own again because we rented for a while because we didn't know where we wanted to live. And like, there we have stuff, but it's just not that much stuff, or is stuff that we like right now we have a few acres of land. So like I have power tools because I need to clear that land, and I'm making gardens and I'm doing gardening. So like I have things, but I would just rather have things that I use and that I value than just have things to have things. Like my living room has three pieces of furniture in it, like a couch, a table, and a chair. That's it. There's no TV. There's no other stuff. There's no bookshelf or bookcases or knickknacks. It's just three things. But I still have things to do the other thing, like the things that I like I surf boards and subs because I surf and I like to stand up paddleboard. I have stuff for my garden. So I think it's more a matter of like, I don't want less stuff. I just want the stuff that I really want instead of just having things to have things.
Yeah, I'm exactly the same. I also love stand up paddleboarding. It's so relaxing. It's one of my favorite things to do.
Nice. So you definitely have to come to Vancouver Island then.
Yeah, I will. I'll be there soon. I'm just going to move in. So do you think that, I mean, you guys live in quite a remote area now. Do you think that people are more likely to live a simpler, slower life when they live away from a city? Or do you think that you can do both? You can live in the city, which is, you know, by nature, just a fast paced kind of environment, and still live a simpler, mindful life?
Yeah, I think it kind of doesn't. I don't think it matters. I think maybe the type of people that are drawn to living far, far out of cities could be more likely to want to live a bit of a slower paced life. But I don't think that's necessarily the case 100% of the time. Like where we live now, it's mostly retired people. Like we're half the age of pretty much everybody else in the neighborhood. It's not really even a neighborhood. There's just like, we can only see one house from where we live. But like the area that we live is mostly retired people, because it doesn't make sense for people that have jobs where they have to commute to live this far away from anything.
Yeah.
So, and I think those people, like I think the people, like the neighbors here are kind of like they like to live out here because they don't like the hustle and bustle of the city or the noise of the city.
Yeah, noise is a big thing for me. I love the quiet.
Same.
Yeah.
Although here it's more like the silence is punctuated with power tools because everybody has it's a bunch of rednecks, so everybody has a lot of power tools. And I mean, I'm guilty of that as well. I just got a new, what's it called? It's called a brush cutter brush whacker or something like that. I need to clear so much land to build a garden. Like I need this thing, but it's loud. Like I had to buy headphones that don't have any audio in them just to like block out to noise cancel, because it's so loud.
You didn't damage your ears.
Yeah, but I feel bad. Like I feel bad revving this thing up because it's loud. And I know everybody within like a couple kilometer radius can hear it, which is why I don't do it at like 6 a.m. or something like that. But yeah, like there is a bit of noise, but I think what I noticed the most from living in a city, because where we lived in Vancouver, we lived on the busiest street right in the heart of the city, right downtown, like a block away from all of the clubs. And there was like a hum of the city. Like it's almost eerie being out of that, because silence here is like actual silence, as opposed to silence in the city. There's still a couple decibels of like background noise, just cars and people and things and electricity. Whereas here, it's almost like you can hear the ringing in your ears because it's so quiet most of the time.
Yeah, unless you're on your bushwhacker.
Yeah, exactly.
So what made you guys want to move from the city to Vancouver Island?
We were just done. We were done with living in a city. We did, like, I don't need to for work, and my wife has many talents and kind of can do whatever she wants. So we realized that we didn't have to be part of the rat race. So we left, we opted out. We unsubscribed.
Unsubscribe from the rat race.
Yeah.
Wow. I know what this episode is going to be titled, but you took your rats with you.
We did.
You did. I love your rats. They're so sweet.
Me too. That's where my office is, the more of a rat room than a home office.
Yeah. Awesome. You share. It's an
office. Yeah, they're not minimalist either. I'd love for them to be minimalist, but they're They love stuff.
Sounds like kids. So one of the things that you have written about that I've really, really loved was busyness and how we use busyness as like a buffer from potential discomfort, you know, sitting in the quiet and actually digging into our thoughts. And, you know, people are afraid of being alone and being quiet and what might actually happen as a result of that. Have you always, I mean, I think you're a pretty introverted person. So yeah. Have you always enjoyed that or been able to kind of access that quiet headspace, or is that something you've had to teach yourself?
Yeah, I think it's something that I'm obviously, because I don't think anybody is super, maybe like some Buddhist monk is super comfortable with that and doesn't feel any fear or discomfort from just being alone with their thoughts from years of meditation. But I think I'm the same as everybody else. Like, it is a little scary, but it's something like I kind of like experimenting with myself and with my life. And like the living with pretty much nothing for almost a year was one of the things. I spent a year not buying anything other than food and gas. Like, I like to experiment. So experimenting with forcing myself to just be with my own thoughts is something that, again, it's uncomfortable, but it's still like, I just like to see kind of what will happen with that. So I don't think I feel any different than anybody else where it is kind of scary and uncomfortable, but I still do it anyways.
I think that's the key though, isn't it? Like, you can understand that you feel nervous or uncomfortable about the idea of just sitting, and then you do it anyway.
Fear and action can exist in parallel.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Pretty good.
I'm with you with the experimentation. It's that I think that's been a massive realization for me and my husband to just try things, you know, don't kind of give any end result to either say it's a success or a failure. Just try things out for a while. This year we're trying, you know, little slow experiments once a month and talking about them on the podcast. But I just love the idea of just trying, you know, and seeing what happens. And I think when you take the pressure of a result away from those experiments, it just becomes fun.
Yeah, I agree. It's like, here's a hypothesis, let's see what happens.
Yeah.
And that's typically how I like to do things. Even when it comes to like products and launching, it's more because there's no guarantee with outcomes. Like, you can never control all of the variables with your life, with what you do, with anything. So it's more fun to just be present, enjoy the process, and then whatever happens, it's something that you're, if it fails or if it's a success, you're still going to learn either way. One probably sucks a little more than the other, but it's still a learning experience. You still kind of figure things out about yourself. So might as well have a play.
Exactly. Yeah. Playfulness is, it's awesome. You also wrote a post about comparison. I think Arianna Huffington might have retweeted it. The one where,
oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
Did she find my article?
I don't know. That's really cool, though.
Yeah.
That no one is living the life you think that they are, you know, and I think specifically you were talking about online. But, you know, the idea of comparison, I think, plays into, well, like most of modern life, to be honest. But I think so much of the discontentment that people feel and their reasons for, you know, accumulating stuff and doing things that they feel like they should be doing is all in response to this idea of comparison. And, you know, everyone's living these amazing lives because of what we see on social media or because of what people choose to share with us. Do you think that people are doing that on purpose, or do you just think that that's part of life at the moment and the way that we choose to share snippets of it?
Yeah, I think that's just the way society is. And I think social media is an easy scapegoat for that. Mm-hmm. But like, even in the, I think it's more of like a post-World War II thing. Like, in the 50s and 60s, that was kind of like, there wasn't anything else. So it was like, you got to keep up with the Joneses. And this was before like the internet by quite a bit. This was before people watching a ton of TV, or maybe it was around the time of TV. So maybe we can blame television, but it's just kind of this thing where it's like, well, I see what other people have, and maybe I want that too. And it's less about getting, it's less about moving forward because of things you want and more about moving forward because of appearances, or moving forward because you think that this is the way that it's supposed to be. Like, well, I'm supposed to have a car, I'm supposed to have a massive mortgage, or just things like that, where it's not like I'm doing these things because I want to, as I'm doing these things for the appearance of success, mm-hmm. or because I feel like it will help me be a success because I'm doing the same things as everybody else is doing. Everybody else is just barely treading water too. But on the outside, it seems like they might have a BMW in the driveway. So obviously they're doing better than everybody that has a Toyota. I don't know. I don't really know cars. I don't know why I went to that.
But I agree. How would you, I mean, as someone, I guess, who has pretty good perspective on that, how would you suggest, like, if someone's asking you, but how do I extricate myself from that, race to keep up with the Joneses? You know, what do you think people can do to make that, to start making that shift?
I don't know. I think one thing is to just be more selfish and to just make things more about you than everybody else, which I'm good at. So that's okay. The other thing is that I don't have time to, I guess it's a prioritization of time. Like, I just don't have time to pay attention to keeping up with anybody, because I'd rather spend my time, for me personally, I'd rather spend my time making things. Mm. So if I spend all my time making things, I'm not paying attention to what other people have or what society tells me I should have. So I don't know. I think it's more about finding like the things you want to be doing, and then you pay less when you're doing those things. You lose track of time. You lose track of what other people are doing. And it just, I don't know, makes life a bit more enjoyable too.
Yeah.
Everybody should just be a hedon, basically.
You heard it here first. But I do think there is so much in that, because when you're engaged with something, whether it's work or a hobby or family or whatever, you know, when you're engaged and you feel like there's purpose in what you're doing, you don't focus on like the external shoulds as nearly as much, you know. And I think work, like finding work that fills that need is part of it. But I also think if people just, you know, spend some more time really questioning like what's important to them and living in accordance with that, that would also kind of help to turn things around and make it more self-centered in a good way.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, people just need a little more introspection and just think about like, okay, if this is what I want, why do I want it? Ask yourself that once, maybe.
Yeah. Do I really want this, or do I want it because I think that I should want it?
Yeah.
So you don't own a TV. Do you watch Netflix or anything?
Yeah, no, we do have a television now. We didn't for about 10 years, okay. But the house that we moved into had like theater room, I guess you could call it. Like, it has a projector with speakers in the wall. So we're like, might as well keep it. Like, I don't. So yeah, we do watch now. We don't watch any live television. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't have time. Like, my life isn't set up to watch things at specific times. So we'll just record every, like, I can't remember the last time I watched live television, because I just don't have time for that. Or my life isn't set up in a way that I have that specific set amount of time every week to watch something. So we'll just record everything or go on Netflix and like just spend a day decompressing and watching stuff.
Yeah.
But it's so hard. Like, and we try to watch live TV as well sometimes, but it never works out because our schedules just aren't set up in any sort of semblance of a routine. And plus, we always forget. Like, I forget that things are on TV until I have nothing, or I want to take a day to just like sit and relax and chill. Then I'll like turn on the PVR and see like, oh, we missed like 8 episodes of this show, so let's just order pizza and watch TV today.
That's such a nice day to do that.
Yeah.
I did find, like, I don't know what live TV is like in Canada. In Australia, it's pretty rubbish. We've been using American Netflix for a long time, and we just got cut off. They're cracking down on it big time here. And we were watching, I mean, my husband sat down last night and he put on commercial TV, Australian TV, and he's just 10 minutes and he was watching it with this like look of terror and horror on his face. He's like, this is so bad. It's really dreadful. I think a few years ago, we just were in the habit of you know, the kids went to bed, we were both dead on our feet. We'd sit down and we'd kind of blob out in front of anything, everything for a couple of hours. And once we made that shift to not watching something unless we really genuinely wanted to watch it, it just became so much more enjoyable. And we also became so much more productive because then we'd do things at night. We both work, like we work for ourselves. So we work at night. And then when we want to, we can sit down and watch something that's actually enjoyable.
Yeah. And we watch, like we do watch shows, but we only, it's funny because we only know about the shows that we watch. We don't, like, I have no idea what's on television. Like, I have no idea what the new shows are or what the popular, I just know the shows that we watch because I fast forward through commercials. I don't watch live television. I don't look at like the TV guide or anything. I just know the things that we like to watch. And we only watch that. So we're not like bombarded with like, oh, how about this show? How about this show? Or if you like this, maybe I hate that on Netflix because it's never right as well. Because you like this, you like this other thing. And it's like,
it's not at all related and terrible.
No, I don't think I'm going to.
But thanks for the suggestion anyway, Netflix. Yeah. No, we're really similar. So going back to like this idea of comparison, I don't know how we ended up talking about TV, but that was probably my fault. There is the flip side to this idea of comparison, I guess, particularly for people like us who live at least a part or present a part of ourselves online through, you know, social media, Instagram, podcasts, whatever.
Yeah.
Do you feel a certain pressure to... for want of a better word, like live up to the person that you are seen to be online?
No, I think I actively try to be just like the all of it, like all of who I am on the internet. So like I write articles like that. I think I called the one you're talking about Apples to Elephants. Yes. Or like I'll post pictures of my rats in like the messy room, or like I would rather try, because I don't know. Sometimes people email me. They're like, oh, like they, I get these emails where they're kind of jealous of a life that I don't even have.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, wait a minute. Like I'm not that person either. So I think that I actively see that and I try to show a more well-rounded as much as I can, I guess.
Well, I guess you counter it really well. I mean, I feel like you get a really good sense of who you are if you've, you know, read your emails and your articles and follow you on social media. You get a good sense of who you are, like talking to you, like, yeah, no, I'm talking to Paul.
I think that's one of like the biggest compliments that people get or that people give me is that they're like, well, you're exactly like you're writing.
Yeah.
It's like, cool. That was the point. So awesome.
I think authenticity is a word that's super overused, but I think in that particular case where you're, you know, connecting with people, it's super valuable to be just yourself. I mean, and I think it can go too far the other way where people get really raw and share stuff that they haven't processed yet and, you know, living really in the moment online. And I think that has a different set of challenges and issues, but I think people feel better as well when they recognize that, oh, your life isn't this perfect, you know, simple, slow, in control, constantly kind of existence. It's pretty much a normal person's life.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it was Brené Brown who said there's a difference between being vulnerable and oversharing.
Yes.
So
I think about that a lot.
Yeah, there's definitely two different things there, but I think it's, like, that's something that I definitely, because I don't want to be seen as an expert, or I don't want to be seen as like the guy above the people that pay attention to me. Like, I don't, that's not me.
Mm-hmm.
So why would I try to portray that? And I don't feel that expertise or authority necessarily needs that. Like, I feel like the way that I try to present myself and the way that I write is that I'm in the trenches with the people that read my stuff. Because that's actually what's happening. Like, I don't know everything. I'm learning as I go. And I would rather people see me like that, because that's honestly like what the case is. So, but I think a lot of people get caught up in this, like, oh, well, if I want to build an audience, or if I want people to like me on the internet, or if I want to have people pay me, then I need to be professional, and which is, I think, is a stupid word. Mm-hmm. Or like, I want to be like seen as an authority, so I have to act authoritatively. Tell I'm more of a writer than a talker. Because if I was typing that word out, I'd know exactly what word was, but I don't know. So I think people get caught up in these ideas of what they think they should be if they're doing something, when it's not at all the case.
Yeah, I agree. And I think there's that whole guru mentality. You know, people either try and paint themselves as a guru of whatever, or people like to put others in that kind of box because – you know, it's a box, and I guess that's what happens sometimes. Okay, so you're a busy person, I think, you know, you've always got lots of things going on. Do you think that there's a difference between busyness, in terms of work and projects and things that you're engaged with and things that you want to do, and then just busyness for the sake of busyness or busy work?
Definitely, because I think I don't think we're smart enough to tell the difference unless we pay attention. Mm. Because I could spend like 4 hours on Twitter, and because I'm a marketer, that's technically work, and then like 15 minutes writing an article, and that takes me 4 hours and 15 minutes. Or I could just cut out the Twitter and write the article in 15 minutes. And both seem like I'm working. But did I really need to spend 4 hours? I don't think I could spend 4 hours on Twitter. That would be awful.
Be terrible.
I hate social media so much. But like, I think we get kind of in our heads where it's like, if we're doing something, we're busy. When in fact, a lot of times it's just busy work. And I think there's a difference between being productive and busy work. And I think sometimes, I think it also comes down to the life that you've created for yourself, because like, I like working, but I also really, really like not working. Like, I want to get my work done so I can stop working. And for some people, their work is what consumes them and what defines them. And maybe that's cool for other people. I don't know, because I'm me. But for me, it's like, I love work and I work really, really hard and I do a lot of things with work. But I also want to get it done so I can stop. So I can spend time with my wife or my rats or my garden or that sort of thing. So I think that for me, I don't want to do busy work because it's eating into my non-work time. Whereas some people have set their lives up in a way where it's just like the work is the thing that they're doing. And I mean, I was like that in my 20s anyway, so I totally get it. But as my life became like full of other things, then it's like, okay, work's okay, but if I get it done quicker, then I can not work sooner, which is kind of a good thing.
I think it's also just kind of going back to what we were talking about before, which is figuring out why, you know, why you want to do things, why you want to make changes. Because when you've got that motivation, that carrot kind of dangling there of downtime, of time in the garden, of surfing, of whatever, you can use that to kind of cut through the crap that we often tell ourselves about being busy, just do what needs to be done and then go off and do the other things that kind of fill us up in a different sort of way.
Yeah. And I think I'm more productive with my work when I'm not working all the time.
Yes, definitely.
Like if I take a break and go for a walk in the woods, then I can come back and get my work done a lot quicker than if I just try to like plow through it kind of thing.
Yeah. And I think that's something that we learn over time as well, because you know, particularly when I was at university and in my 20s, I just thought that if I ran myself into the ground and did not take breaks, then that was, you know, the best way to get everything done. But I'm realizing after a couple of, you know, breakdowns and getting super sick because I was completely stressed, that that's for me, and I'd suggest the vast majority of people, we don't operate at 120% effectively at all, but particularly not for a prolonged period of time. And to kind of take those breaks, go for a walk, go and have a cup of tea in the sun, they sort of refuel us in a different way, in a really important way.
Yeah, and I'm too old to sit for that long. Like, my body just isn't good enough to do that anymore. Like, if I don't get up and move around, then I pay for it.
You're just like this kind of hobbled, you know, ball of tense muscles.
Yeah.
Two more things that I wanted to talk to you about before we go. You sort of mentioned before that you don't have any kind of routine to your work day because of the nature of your work. You know, you're creating products and you're doing design work. And do you have routines in other areas of your life, or are you really happy to just go with the flow?
Yeah, there's nothing. Like, the only routine that I really have is I get up and I make my coffee. Like, that's the... And I just like stand there and kind of let my brain empty while the water's boiling. But past that, like, there's not really anything specific that, like, I don't really have a morning routine. Other than that, I don't have, yeah, I guess I'm just not built for routine. I think that's why I work for myself, because I don't want to have routines. I don't want to have to get up at the same, like, I haven't had an alarm clock for probably 20 years because I don't care.
Yeah. Do you think that being self-employed makes it easier to live a simpler or slower life?
I don't know, because I've only ever been self-employed. Right. I have no idea.
That's something that I'm asked about a lot, because my husband and I have just started this year our own business, and people kind of push back. Yeah, it's really exciting. People kind of push back and say, yeah, but it's easier to do these things when you don't need to get up and go into the office. And I think, you know, there is definitely parts of it that are easier for us now, but there's also a whole other set of challenges that, you know, that just require a workaround. Yeah, it's interesting. It will be interesting, I think, to give it 12 months and see whether or not we feel like it's, you know, simpler or easier or not. But it's all good. The last thing that I wanted to ask you is kind of a practical question. If someone's listening to this and, you know, they want to make more time for creativity or quiet or gardening or something that fills them up, something that takes them away from all of this busy work or this stuff that they need to do, what's the one thing that you would recommend that they start with? Like, what's the first step or the first action that people could take that would allow that to happen, you know, allow some space and some time to open up?
Yeah, I think you answered it in the question that you asked. I think space is required.
Yeah.
I think creativity thrives when you give it space, or introspection thrives when you have the space to introspect, right? So I think when we are fill our days with stuff, like we fill our days with, like, if I'm waiting in line at the bank or at the grocery store, then I'm on my phone and I'm looking at stuff. It's like, there's no gaps. Like, there used to be so many gaps where you could just basically be alone with your thoughts. And now with our tiny pocket devices, even, like, cars are computers now too. Mm. So, like, we're always surrounded by stimulus if we want it. But if we just opt out of the stimulus some of the time, then I think we will open ourselves up to have the space to figure out, like, okay, what do we actually want to do? Or, like, what's our purpose or why? Or why do we want to do this and not this? Or why should we maybe not buy this just because somebody else has this? So I think once we start to give ourselves the space to think for ourselves, then that's a scary place, obviously. Mm. But I think it's a necessary place.
It is really scary. And, like, your example of waiting in line, you know, at the bank or at the grocery store, it's like a muscle memory thing now. You know, the second we stop, and even, you know, people do it when they stop their car at a set of traffic lights, you know, oh, what have I missed? What do I need? Like, why? I've got to tap in because I might have missed something, or because I might sit here and have a thought for a minute. And I mean, I don't think people think about it in such a black and white kind of way, but we still do it. And I find that once we start to pay attention to that and the actions that we're taking mindlessly, that's when we kind of have the opportunity I interviewed Anthony Ongaro last week, and he talked about breaking the twitch, you know, so you feel the twitch and you ignore it, or you move against it rather than pick up your phone.
Yeah. That's why I take like 2-ish months a year off of social media, because when you're in it, it's hard to even notice that it is like a reflex. And then if you stop or you cold turkey out of it, then it's like, whoa, I really wanted to like check my phone about 1,000 times in the last 6 hours. This is probably not that healthy or good for me, or my brain could be put to better use doing other things.
Yeah, I went offline for almost a month over Christmas this past year. And the same thing, the first few days, it was a real shock to me to realize how many times I would just mindlessly grab for my phone, or, you know, scroll through, get on the computer to quote unquote check something. And 33 minutes later, I'd be on Facebook and, you know, have done the whole rounds of social media. And exactly. It's just that, like, breaking that habit is incredibly important. I've still not put any of the social media apps back on my phone, which has been really nice.
So do you miss it now? Like, has the itch lessened now that it's been a little while?
Yeah. So I need to, like, if I want to get on Facebook, I actually have to sit down at my computer, at my desk. And, you know, there's about five mm-hmm. different steps and extra steps between the little voice in the back of my head saying, I wonder what's happening, and sitting down and actually doing it. And those steps are all an opportunity for me to say, I don't really need or want to be doing this. So
yeah, I have it set up the same way. Like, it's not, I have to actually go in and log in to get into the things.
Exactly. No, I find that's probably been one of the most helpful things that I've done in the last 6 months, just to get mindful about it again, because otherwise it's incredibly easy, and it's set up to be easy for us to lose ourselves.
Yep. That's what they
that's want what they you bet on. Yeah. The evil they.
Yep.
Well, Paul, it has been wonderful to talk to you. Thank you so much for chatting with me.
Yeah, my pleasure. I've enjoyed it.
Awesome. I'll chat to you soon.
Cheers.
This has been another episode of the Slow Home Podcast. If you enjoyed it, be sure to subscribe via iTunes and leave us a rating or a review. Thanks for listening.
Jackrabbit FM.
For your ears.
Who is that? Hi, podcast.